way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd.
And we are live, folks. A few minutes early on a day that we are very, very early, and I'm interested to see what that will do to the live stream turnout. We usually are going live somewhere between about 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the summer anyway. But today we made some accommodations for a guest because of time zone differences and things like that. And so we are live not only early, but a day later than normal. We're here on a Thursday instead of a Wednesday. That's why we had expert counsel yesterday. But I'm really kind of stoked about this. We're going to have Philip on in just a minute from the All About Pigeons podcast located at pigeonpod.com. And we're going to be talking pigeons today. We're going to be talking about pigeons as a lot of things, as a means of communication, which they were traditionally used for at a time you couldn't just pick up the phone and reach out and touch someone, right? And they're still useful for that. But they also are a tremendous potential livestock animal and serve some other really great purposes. I actually personally go back a little bit with this. I was talking to Philip before we got live on the air. My great uncle Pete, who lived only one house north of my grandfather and my grandmother, he's my grandmother's brother. That was the familial relationship. He was a pigeon man. He had about a 3-acre place and a pretty good sized coop. And he raised pigeons. Pennsylvania is one of the places where we actually shoot pigeons in competitions. It's one of the few states where that's legal. I don't even know if it's legal anymore. It was legal back in the 70s and 80s. And he was really good at his craft. And, nothing was wasted too. When a bird was dead, the bird's dead. And so then it's actually quite edible. So, it was an interesting thing to grow up with, kind of in my backyard. It's something I've always kind of teased around with. But I tend to grow the things that my wife will eat with me. And since she wouldn't eat quail, I figured she wouldn't eat pigeons. But I damn sure would. And so we're going to have Philip on to talk about all of this and more in just a minute. And I see live stream folks showing up. So this is my time when I remind you during the show today, if you have a question or something you want us to comment on, make sure you put the word question or comment in all caps and then try to make your question or comment in one sentence. And we will try to answer it for you toward the end of the show. I give some leeway with off topic questions on shows where it's just me. When I have a guest, if you ask me about something like Bitcoin or how to seal a dam or an aquaponics thing or like AI or anything that's totally off topic today, I will ignore it. I'll just tell you that. And I know what's going to happen already. I mean, somebody's like, I know it's off topic, but delete. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one today, has been with us as a sponsor for about a decade and a half. That is Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleaton at usaberkeyfilters.com. I run a Berkey, and I'm on a 160-foot well, and it's underneath about 120 feet of limestone. And so you would think like you don't really need to worry. Well, my water tastes a hell of a lot better when it comes out of a Berkey. And even at that depth and in that situation, you can have pesticide infiltration and other things that are not good to be in your body. And if you are on city water, the crap that they put in the water on purpose really doesn't belong in your body. And whenever you get an alert that says, hey, boil your water, there was a problem long before you got the alert. That's how that works. And then water is life. So you need to be drinking the most healthy water that you can, which unfortunately doesn't just come out of your faucet anymore. So you want to check out usaberkeyfilters.com and get a Berkey or filters for it. And Jeff also has some other cool stuff for your prepping needs and gives a discount to MSB members. So check his site out today, usaberkeyfilters.com. Next up today, JM Bullion. Silver's been on a hell of a run, and I've recently given some advice. Like, this is probably not the time to go all in on silver, but I approach silver the same way I do Bitcoin. I buy a little bit all the time over time and dollar cost average. And, during the down parts of markets, what I call accumulation troughs, I throw more money in. When I'm at really highs, I hold some back. Right now, we're kind of in that middle ground. We don't really know where it's going to go next, but I highly advise that you over time stack silver and or gold into your wealth assurance program. I recommend about 5% of your net worth across time invested in precious metals. I've been recommending that since 2008. It's 2026, and that recommendation has not changed. With that, I want to welcome our special guest to the show, Philip Fry. Hey, Philip, man, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Zach. Happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you with us today, man. Look, as I said kind of leading up to this, my background with pigeons is that my great uncle that lived one house north of us raised pigeons, but I didn't really like learn to raise pigeons or anything. But it is not the thing that you typically meet like an average person. You're like, what do? I raise pigeons, right? So I'm assuming there is some sort of backstory for you to how you ended up as a pigeon man, right? How do you go from being a normal dude to a pigeon man? How'd that happen?
Yeah, I mean, they are kind of like you say, it's kind of like in the background, you know, like you kind of maybe. What's that kind of weird? Is that a chicken coop in your backyard, you know? And then you hear it's pigeons, yeah. And it's kind of whatever, that's weird sort of a thing. And I always say, you know, when I talk to my friends who have pigeons, it's either you're kind of born into it, like my family's had pigeons, my dad, and, you know, I just kind of carried it on sort of a thing. Or you kind of hear about it because of, you know, what's in your backyard, or my neighbor had pigeons and I used to, you know, be involved with them that way. So I got into it because I was kind of looking for side hustles, and I started reading about white dove releases. And white dove releases are just white homers that you release again,
right?
And again and again and again. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. This is brilliant, you know? So I got some white doves, and I was, you know, white homers, because all pigeons are doves, like Columbia, yeah. Olivia, you know, they're all doves. And so I was doing white dove releases, and the more I spent in the loft and, you know, just reading books about pigeons, and then, you know, hundreds of breeds, and all these breeds do different things, tons of different things. It's amazing. Rabbit hole, and just got really sucked into the whole hobby hard. So it was a lot of fun.
And that business model will lead kind of where we're going next. But I want to hit on that business model for a minute, right? This idea, we get a bunch of white doves, which are white pigeons, because all pigeons are doves. The colloquial name is rock dove for a lot of pigeons. And so the person that raises the beautiful white pigeons, feeds the beautiful white pigeons, essentially sells, like, I don't know, two dozen white pigeons that they call doves to be released at the bride's, you know, behest at the wedding. And you take them there and you let them go, and you get this beautiful scene, and the photographer snaps all the shots, and everybody's amazed. And then the birds that you effectively sold fly right back to your house, and you just basically gave them an exercise day.
Yeah, because you have to do that anyway. So I train all of mine at, like, cemeteries, for instance.
Okay.
Because I do a lot of funerals. And so I have to train them anyway. So I do releases, you know, when no one's there. And so on the days where, you know, we're getting paid to do the release, it's just another training toss for the birds.
Yeah, but you're getting paid to do it.
Yeah,
and I guess when you do that training, you kind of start out like you take the birds, you know, 500 yards away and let them go the first time, and then you kind of extend that range. Is that how that works with new flocks?
Yeah, so with racing homers, white doves are all the same. So when you got like a very brand new flock, yeah, you'll start like a mile away, kind of hit different directions, and then 5 miles, and then 10. But once you hit 10 miles, you know, it's 20 miles, 30 miles, you know, you can do the big jumps that way.
Yeah. Like I said, my uncle raised them for pigeon shoes, which, okay, I'm sure a lot of people have very strong emotions about, but don't blame me. I was 12. I had nothing to do with it. But what I found really amusing was that these birds were very expensive in these matches, because there was a lot of, these were for money, right? There was a lot of money, yeah, on the line in these matches. So basically, if I'm shooting and you're my bird man, then my competitor's shooting at your birds. And you, yeah, know your birds, and that was how that works. So that might be $25 a bird in a 10-bird match. So that's $250, and we're talking 1978.
Yeah.
That's a pretty sizable chunk of change back in 78. But every bird that got missed, which was a lot more of them than you'd think, flew straight home.
Just right, yep. Yeah.
There were like I think I remember my Uncle Pete one time saying, like, he's retired. I'm like, what do you mean he's retired? He said, he had 10 matches. I want his genetics in my flock. I'm not putting him out there again, you know? So there is like that business model, but One of the things that you wanted to talk about today, and it hones in on this homing instinct, is that pigeons were one of the most reliable communication tools in human history for quite a while. And yeah. Electronics sort of like took their jobs, right? They took our jobs, right? Like the telegraph, the telephone, the radio stole the pigeons' jobs. But can you talk about how they became such a valuable communication tool in human history, and why literally armies trusted these things?
Yeah, and so this goes way, way back. So our relationship with pigeons, literally like the earliest forms of writing that humans have found, we're writing about pigeons. You know, even in like, you know, hieroglyphs, like there's pigeons in there. You know, how we view cell phones today, how we're so clung to these things and our technology, like that's what our dovecotes, how we kept our pigeons. That's our relationship with pigeons, because that was big communication. That was how we communicated, I mean, fast and effectively. And so how it would work back in the day was, you know, a dovecote would be the housing that you would keep all of your pigeons in. And it would also, because it was also agriculture, we'll talk about that later, but you would have, you know, kind of, it would be a flex, how big of a dovecote you had, because also it would be how well you could communicate. So when you would pass and you would meet with somebody who's from further away, you would exchange crates with pigeons. So I'd give you my pigeon crate, you'd give me your pigeon crate, we'd go back, and then whenever you wanted to send me a message, you would release one of my pigeons. It'd come right back to my loft, I'd recognize it coming in, read the message, I'd release one of your pigeons, and then it wouldn't necessarily just be between me and you, it could be between communities, and all sorts of ways of doing that. And so that's the really ancient times. But then during wars, they would have these mobile lofts that they would use. And so they would actually be able to train the pigeons to come back to a mobile loft, which is another, you know, these birds are amazing how you can train them to do these things. Because
yeah,
even the ability of homing, it's funny because you can watch videos online and they'll say, oh, it's the little bit of ironite in their head and it's the magnetic fields and,
yeah,
you know, or it's the smells. And, you know, we've done interviews with professors from universities who all they do is, you know, they have teams of college kids putting caps on their eyes and doing different things, and nobody knows. Like, they have pretty good theories and stuff, but they still don't really know. There is no solid conclusive evidence on this. They know that, like, during big solar days,
yeah,
that for real, like, racing teams will have really bad days. Like, a lot of birds will get, you know, discombobulated, and it'll take a lot longer for them to get.
That makes you feel like there's something in the magnetic field part of it. Like,
there has to be.
Why else would that happen, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so there, you know, and it could be a mix of everything, you know. But yeah, it's amazing some of the distances that these birds do, because, you know, 600-mile races and stuff like that. You know, the distances that these birds can really travel and get back to their spot, and their speeds. You know, their average speed is 60 mph, and they're not taking roads, they're not hitting stoplights,
yeah,
and
yeah,
you know, they always beat me home. Anytime I turn them loose, you know, I'm just,
I'll, well, they're call straight line, and there's no traffic, yeah, light, there's no stop sign, yeah, there's no yield sign, right? And they're like, home is where the food is and the safety is. Because I remember my uncle's least favorite critter on the planet, you know, it wasn't raccoon or fox or anything, because he just make the coop fox proof, but it was hawks. Right, yeah. Hawks and falcons, birds of prey were the number one thing that he worried about. But you made me think of a question here. So, like, I remember my uncle would tell me, like, when you want to expand your flock or whatever, if you don't want to buy birds, you just basically go catch bridge pigeons, and then you kind of select from them what you want. And but when you did that, basically you held that bird for a time, and if you held it long enough, it then saw your coop and your flock as its new flock and its new home, instead of just, because the one you caught out of the bridge, if you just put him in the coop and you fly your birds every day, right, he's just going back, right? He's going to do the same thing. He's self-oriented, right? So when I give you my pigeon and you hold on to it until you need to send me a message, how long can you do that before that bird starts to say, well, I ain't going home. Screw that, dude. He gave me to this guy. This guy feeds me. I see, you know, girly pigeons up there look pretty good. I think I'm gonna, you know, the little pigeon straw, I'm gonna stay around here. How do we prevent that from happening, or how long can we go, or do we just maybe house that bird differently? Like he's solo and he doesn't get to integrate. How does that work?
So one thing you would do is if they do start, like if it's a hen, for example, or a cockbird and a hen, if you see them pairing up,
yeah,
you pull their eggs, because you definitely don't want them to start nesting and raising young.
Yeah.
Because that would be another way that they would ground. But okay. Also that, like, whenever you do bring birds in, this is a mistake a lot of new fanciers would make, is I got these birds, I can't wait, I want to see them fly. Everyone wants to get pigeons and just turn them out and see them fly.
Yeah.
You know, well, they've had like four sets of eggs now. I think they're good. They turn that bird out and the bird's like back to their owner 100 miles away, you know. But okay. It's like, hey, if they've had babies, then they've already replaced themselves. They're good, you know. But okay. They, especially homers, there's certain breeds like Birmingham Rollers and stuff like that. You can rehome real easy, but
yeah,
homers, I mean, that's what they do.
So, so what you're saying is it's less a problem with the fact that I want that bird to go, and more a problem if I don't want them to go. Even if I have them for quite a while, as long as they haven't really integrated into the flock, they're going to help. Okay.
Yeah, they're going to wind up doing that, yeah.
And there's specific breeds, obviously, you call them homers, that are more predisposed than that. That makes a lot of sense, because I know that that's how he got started. He got started with wild birds, but like if they reproduce long enough, and then at least that next generation is homed. Okay.
Yeah. They have grounding techniques, which you can like cut the flight feathers, soak their wings, and I mean, it's a whole thing. It's not worth it. Just let them breed. They breed like, you know, rabbits. I mean, they just go. They'll make a replacement for themselves, and then if they want to go back home, let them go back. They can get sold again, you know, make the breeder happy.
Yeah. That's cool. What does it actually take to set up a small homing pigeon loft on a homestead, including like your space, feed, basic equipment, stuff like that?
Yeah. So it depends on what you're doing with it. So if it's going to be like a agricultural purpose or anything like that, but most pigeon lofts are pretty simple. There's a lot of different ways of looking at it, you know? So my whole thing is I want to do a proper dovecote right now, 'cause I have a couple of different little lofts, but the average idea is about 2 square foot a pigeon. So they don't really need a lot of space. And it depends on where you are. So I'm out in northern Arizona, so we get kind of hot, kind of cool. So like expanded steel on the floor is good for ventilation. It's real similar to how you would kind of do a chicken coop, except for the fact that you'd want a place for them to come and go out of the top for flying and stuff like this. So, you know, a lot of nesting areas, perches and stuff like this, not really too big. And if you actually look at a lot of pigeon lofts, they look almost too small, really. I mean, it's a small bird, but it depends on the breed too. 'Cause some of the breeds, like if you're doing for straight utility purposes, like a meat bird, like kings and carnews, those are about the size of a chicken. So you're going to want bigger space. I mean, bigger nest boxes and stuff like that too. So it'd be kind of breed specific on that way.
And when you say dovecote, I've seen a bunch of different ways that pigeons are housed. My uncle had a coop, but maybe we also call that a cote, but it was like kind of like a chicken coop, except it was set up for pigeons, and it had things that opened at the top so they could fly out and come back in when he was exercising them. But I've also seen things that are more like, they look like a birdhouse on a pole, you know. Yeah. They might house like 8 pair. And that's kind of a cool way to do things too, because I've seen people that distribute them on their property. So you basically, if you move the coat, you move where the poop goes. Mm-hmm. And so they're using them as a fertility means. When you say coat, what exactly are you talking about?
So I'm kind of referring back to like the really ancient dove coats, right? So there's those that are like you're talking about the pole, and there's like a building on top. And that's also a really good way to kind of eliminate some like predation areas where, like you're saying, like raccoons and stuff like that can't really get up in there and cause havoc.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of speaking about like what you would see like in the Middle East. Like that's where a lot of the history with pigeons is coming out of. And they'd be these kind of tower-like structures, real cylindrical. And that way, because so pigeons are really clean animals, so when they every time they poop out of their nest. And so they turn around and poop. And so if you're going to a cylinder like that, all that poop is shooting like this. It all goes down to the middle. So it just makes, if you're going in there, you know, it's amazing fertilizer. There it is. Yeah. And then they got that top area, which provides ventilation, and it provides a place for them to come and go. And it's a and through that hole right there, you know, it works really well for them to have a quick escape route from if they are being chased by a bird of prey or anything like that. But it works really well for them. You can go in there, you can grab squab, grab eggs, and, you know, that's how it's been done a long time. They usually make it out of bricks or mud or clay or some type of earthen material.
Yeah, and like what I'm showing on the screen for those that are listening to audio, because we have about 200-to-1 ratio of audio over video, is literally a structure that looks like it's a human structure with dove coat integrated into the top of like a high-pitched roof, round roof. Like I don't know what you even call that roof. I'm not that. I know what a gable is, but that ain't one. But I've also like studied this a bit, and like, you know, like you said, the Middle East, a lot of that area, Asia, even Europe, this was the thing. And a lot of these dovecotes were actually integrated into housing with humans.
Oh yeah.
And so that there is basically a food source right there. And what these folks are relying on to a large degree is if I have chickens, they can free range some, but I have to feed them.
Yeah.
If I have birds that are homed and will come back and keep making babies, even if I feed them some, and I probably am, but I don't have to feed them anywhere near as much because, first of all, they're a smaller bird. Second of all, they go get shit. They go forage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this was, if you want to talk about a survival protein source, a well-hummed flock that keeps making babies that does a lot of self-foraging, especially if you live in a place where there's a lot of stuff for them to go forage, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, and think about it, you know, because, and so this is like where the real history is, like, because it goes back to, it started off as an agricultural purpose. Like these are really, they built the dovecotes as a food source. And, you know, when they keep looking back into the history of it, this was like our first relationship with it. It was like right when we kind of started the agriculture side of things that they were kind of around. But this is how it always was. It was, they had the dovecotes and they weren't really feeding them. And so if you were to start a dovecote, you would have to first get the birds and you would have to ground them all in there until they at least had some babies. And then once they, like I said, once they replace themselves and have their babies, then you're free to open them up, let the parents fly or whatever, because those birds that are born there, you basically can't get them, can't get rid of them. That's going to be their home. But they will fly, you know, 50, 60, whatever miles they have to go. They will forage their own food, get their own water, come back, reproduce. And so there you go. There's a food source that you can have without putting up fencing, without going to Tractor Supply, buying bags of feed, having to be like, oh, I'm traveling. How am I going to build an automatic watering system?
Yeah.
Any of that, you know. Food, you know, all that stuff. And you got
that's
and
a good point. So like, if I like to do these like week long trips. And it's always hard with everything here. But if I had a dovecote set up, I could put an automatic open and close of the door in the morning and the evening. And once my birds are homed, they'll look after themselves for a week. And if I put a little bit of automated feed just to keep them like, I like feeding anything I own at least a little bit, because then like I am the food god, right? And that keeps them kind of like happy with where they are. But I get why if you're born into, and I'm wondering, is this your coop, coat, whatever that's in this video on your Facebook page?
Oh no, that's somebody else's. Yeah,
somebody else. I don't know. But let's say I'm a pigeon and I'm born here, right? That's a pigeon that's nice. Mansion, right? And like, when I'm flying around, I seem like my brother and sister pigeons are like living under a bridge with hobos. Huh. I'm going, and I get fed here. I'm going home. Like, yeah, of course I'm not going anywhere else. I can see that I've got it good if I'm in that situation. Why would you possibly leave the place you were born into if you're a pigeon and everything on the planet's trying to eat you and you have this safe, secure location with other pigeons? Like, of course you would stay there. And they're colony animals anyway, right? So.
Yeah.
That's now their colony. This is their bros, right? They're going to hang out.
Yeah. And I have, and so there's different ways of, so there's meat pigeons, right? Like I said, like there's a breed called the Carnu and King, and there's other utility breeds and they're big. Like I said, they're almost the size of chickens. You know, they're huge dressed out. I mean, they're like around 350, 380 grams. They're,
okay.
You know, I don't know what the, whatever comes out as, but they're big birds. And so something that large, you know, they're not going to be out flying around, but a Homer sized pigeon, you know, like a racing Homer, like the common, like ferals that you would find, Like yeah. they go out and get their own. So what I did is I came up on some ferals from Tucson, Arizona, and I did some crossing between them and racing homers, because racing homers are a little bit bigger, a little more breast meat on them.
Yeah.
So I put a little bit of size on them, and I have a flock that, you know, I don't feed them. I don't provide water or feed or anything, and they breed like crazy. You know, they have, they just babies. And what they do is at about 4 weeks old, the babies in the nest are the same size as the parents, except they've never flown. So that meat is like, it's like soft. Pigeon Wagyu, you know,
it's like
veal, you know? And so it's, and the pigeon meat compared to like chicken meat, when you cut into it, it's red, you know, it's not it's white dark meat. It's really dark meat, you know, and it's really
purple. It's almost purple, right? Like,
yes. Yeah.
It looks very much like if you're a dove hunter, it looks like a little bit darker and bigger than a dove. One of the farms we used to hunt in South Pennsylvania, the farmer had just tons of pigeons living in his barn. And he was like, when you're here shooting pigeon or doves, if you see pigeons, shoot them. If you want to. We're like, well, hell yeah. And what I remember is like when we would process a dove, just yank the wings off, pull the breast out, like, but the pigeons, we're using a machete to take the wings off of them. But the breast itself, even in an older, tougher bird, was pretty damn good eating. You just had to cook it differently. But it was about double the size of a dove breast.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but squabs that came out of my uncle's place, the thing about them is you could cook them skin on, because when they're that young, not only is that meat more tender, they hand pluck like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just about
enough. And it just comes off like.
Yeah, and like, harvesting is so easy because, you know, you're not in there trying to, you know, catch all these wild birds. You just
out of the nest,
you know, four weeks. It's super easy.
In the words of my buddy David, everything tastes better as a baby. He's usually talking about carrots and shit like that when he says it, but I mean, veal, it's
veal. I mean,
veal, right?
Yeah, basically, and that's how they do squab production. It's
Wagyu veal.
Yeah, that's, I mean, because that's what it is. It's in it. Yeah. So pigeons actually create a milk when they're feeding their young. You know, not other birds do this. They create a crop milk. And so it's really high in fat. And so all that's going directly into the baby. So they're getting this really fat content, you know, into their meat. And it's, you know, it all translates right to the flavor, too. I mean, it's, you know, when you go to a restaurant and you order a squab, I mean, that's. You know, that's that fancy dish right there. You know, they're not going down to the fridge and getting it, you know.
Meal of kings and royalty, man.
That's right, yeah.
Let's back up and talk a little bit about more communication stuff, though. Let's talk, can you lay out, like, how a pigeon communication route works between two locations and what training birds need to reliably deliver messages looks like?
Yeah, so let's say you build the dovecote or you build a loft, and you get some racing homers. So first you're gonna let them breed, and you're gonna get a few babies. And once you finally get some young birds, you're gonna loft fly them. Just open up the doors on the top, let them loft fly. And what they're gonna naturally do is, it's called routing. So they're gonna fly 2 miles out and come back. They're gonna fly that way and come back. So they're already going a couple miles out and coming back and getting that location set. And so once you see them kind of circle, then disappear for like a half hour and come back, you know that they're routing. And that kind of tells you that they're ready to get put in a crate and kind of drive down the road. But don't waste gas. If you're going to town sort of a thing, just take them with you, go to a parking lot, turn them out, let them come back. And then this way you can start, like I said, once you get to about 5 miles, 10 miles, after 10 miles, you can start jumping 20, 30, you know, 10 mile increments and doing the bigger jumps like that. And, one of the cool things that I had a friend who does 3D printing, he 3D printed me. So the bands that we put on our pigeons, you can buy pigeon bands to identify just like with chickens. They're 8 millimeters for homers. So he printed me this. I should have had one here. It's a clip. It clips over their wrist, over their foot. And it has a nice little capsule with a threaded lid that's water sealed. So you can drop a little USB into it. So instead of handwriting on a little rice piece of paper, you could put a USB, tons of information, and then send that bird over, you know, and then you can have so much information being sent back and forth. And
talk about air-gapped communications.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like you could send a Bitcoin payment that way, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that is, I feel like a dumbass now because that never even occurred to me. Like, I remember, I like watching like World War One movies and they roll up the little encrypted, cipher and stick it in the tube. And like, well, no shit, dumbass. You would send like a micro USB card or a micro USB stick today because you could put all the data on it. You could have it password protected, and as long as the other party knows the password, even if somebody got a hold of the data, you're not getting in.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's still secure. Yeah. And I mean, it's a watertight capsule and stuff, and I mean, it's still really small, and the pigeons have no problem flying with it at all. I mean, I've tested it a bunch of times, and they've gone great distances with it.
And I'm sure once it gets taken off, you're like, when I get where I'm going, they'll take it off anyway. So I get.
Yeah. I mean, when they get in the loft, they're a little annoyed, with it on their foot and it just pops right off. And, exactly.
That's really cool. And for those listening to the audio that can't see him, if you're like, am I hearing pigeon noises in the background? If you're wondering if Jack did that, I did not do that. He's in his coop. This is a DSPC first, man. We've got live pigeon cooing on the air, and I dig it.
Yeah, I got about a dozen pigeons right on the other side of me right now. I got parlor rollers and homers and all kinds of pigeons.
Very, very cool. Can you maybe talk about why pigeons are like one of the most overlooked livestock animals for like small scale meat production on a homestead? Because I have heard a lot of people talk about it here and there, bits and parts, mostly people like me that were always looking for content. So like, oh, and you could do this. But I have not met many people doing this. I've had, I have about 80 people at my house every year, and I've been doing that for 13 years. And some years I did two or three of those because I was crazy back then. Now I do one a year. I have had people come through that do almost anything that we talk about on the air. I have yet to meet somebody that come to one of my workshops and say, hey, I do pigeons. So I think when you say overlooked, you are not kidding.
Yeah. I think it all goes back to just they have such a unfair reputation. I'm going to go back and so I forget the name of the actor. It was that movie Stardust and the dude was like, rats with wings. And then some...
Yeah.
It stuck so hard. And then back in the day, pest control companies were like putting out these posters of picture of a pigeon, picture of a kid getting sick by a pigeon. It's like, man, that is not how, zoonotic diseases don't jump.
That's birds not how animals, this works.
That's right there. Yeah. Say it, but
for the audio people, it's a sort of, I would say Asian looking chick that looks like she's got you held down by your throat in a fight. She's about to give you a good left to the face. And it says, say pigeons are rats with wing again. I dare you. I've never bought into that either. I get how you could think that because they reproduce like rats.
Yeah, they're all
they just need to show up wherever the hell they want to, but they're not some sort of massive disease vector. You're like that farmer down in Lancaster, it's raiding his feed bins and shit. I understand that. But in general, they pretty much, I think, even wild pigeons bring more to the table than they take in that they clean shit up, right? They eat stuff, right? They poop. Yes. Yeah, so what? So do we all. Your dog craps. I mean, what?
Where I live, I got sparrows like crazy and they poop on everything, it's just, it is what it is. It's, you live in nature, you're going to have stuff like that happen. And I mean, the real shame is that it's like, they have literally saved soldiers' lives, like countless soldiers' lives. There's famous war pigeons. There's been 32 Dickens medals awarded to pigeons during wartime for like doing these amazing things and straight up saving our soldiers. We've had this long history going back thousands of years, and now we're like, man, rats with wings, you're dirty, And it's like, of course we would do that as people, just totally turn our backs on them. And it's like, it's a real shame. And so I think that just translates right on into how we can still have a relationship with them in all these other ways. It's as an effective way of communication. I mean, I'm also kind of bummed that like our own government doesn't even still have a pigeon corps. It's like, why did we abandon that in the 50s? China, they have a monster pigeon corps. They have miles of coops you know, they are building theirs. Like, they have a ton of pigeons in their system right now.
Bro, I never understand why militaries phase out older technology completely. If you want to talk like armor from the knights of yore, okay, right? I get that, but like when we take these relatively recent technologies and we let them go because we found something newer and better, it is often the case that when that new technology fails, it is far easier to regress than progress from that moment, right? Okay. To go back to what used to work that nobody's prepared for now. And by the way, you didn't have much of a, unless you, like, you had a guy with a shotgun right when one guy was letting a bird out of a trench waiting for birds. There's not much defense against this. There's no signal jamming. There's no satellite imagery that's going to take it away. It's a totally much more advanced thing, but like, you know, just a few months ago, they're talking about retiring the A-10. Mm-hmm. And what's doing heavy lifting right now for ground support, or air support of ground operations in Iran? The A-10.
It's still actively working.
That's the best damn thing we have to do that mission. So just because other things can sort of do that mission, that plane can linger for hours. Waiting to come in and provide support, where those F-35s have to be in and out and back to refuel and resupply. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same but different in the words of Tommy Chong, right? This bird can get a message anywhere you want in a way that no one can disrupt. We don't need that anymore.
Yeah, it's worked for so long. But, you know, because if they're the last few generations have been born not knowing about pigeons and only knowing about smartphones, then that's the norm. And it's like, you know, you kind of have amnesia where it's like you just forget about this long history and what they can really do, you know. But it's really a shame. I mean, they have so many, they check so many boxes, you know. They breed fast, you know, a really small footprint to have a loft, you know, because the loft is really small. I mean, you could have a setup in your yard where, you know, like I said, no fencing, you know, don't feed, don't water. I mean, these are all homers too that you can still use for communication, and you know, it's so turnkey to get started with it. And I'll say this too, that like those ferals that I got out of Tucson, cause I've always had racing homers and I've had different breeds. I show pigeons too. So I have the fancy breeds and other competitive breeds, but feral pigeons, you know, which are just like the street pigeons that you see, which are kind of just crosses and stuff. But that's a scrappy breed of pigeon. I mean, think about where they're living. You know, they're drinking out of like puddles, out of, you know, potholes, and they're living off, you know, McDonald's French fries and everything else. So if you have anywhere, you know, remotely, you know, country would probably be really ideal for them. But, you know, they can live in an urban environment and survive.
Oh, they do it all the time. Go to a park, right? Yeah, I mean, they live there and no one takes care of them, right? Kids feed them bread and shit, but that's about it.
Yeah, they'll survive off of anything that you have out there. I mean, where I live, it'd be like High Plains Desert. You know, so we have grasslands and stuff, you know, like I have goats that graze on grass and stuff. So there's seeds and stuff like that they're probably foraging on a lot. But, you know, they live on every continent except Antarctica. So they're survivors, you know, and I think that's part of the whole rats with wings is that everywhere you look, there's pigeons. It's like because they're survivors. So even if you don't necessarily have like a green thumb towards keeping livestock, this is probably one that you could probably be pretty successful with, because if you can build somewhat of a structure, they can live under a bridge, you know. The whole Columbia Olivia, the rock dove, you know, they live on a cliff, they live on this. So everybody gives them shit because it's like, oh, look at how pigeons build the nest, it's just two sticks. It's like, that's all they need. They just need to keep their egg from rolling off that edge, you know. They don't need to build an eagle's nest, you know. It's just two sticks, that's good, you know.
You know, and they are something you can get started with for almost nothing. I mean, you can take an old tough shed or build like a shack basically, and if you know what you're doing, and you can go capture ferals. My uncle's trap, and I'm sure it's not his, it was just a trap that was used and he used too, basically was about a 2-foot by 3-foot box with chicken wire around it, an open bottom, and then the top was just a grid of like a heavy gauge wire that made squares, right? And he would go to a place and he would feed them in that place for like a week. Like, go out every day and throw out some feed. So they got accustomed to feed being there. And he'd set the box with the bottom up. So if they went in the box to get the food that was in the box, they could get out. They lost all fear. The box was just a box. And then, you know, he'd go like a week after doing that and flip it over so that grid was on the top. And those birds would land on that grid. They'd look down in there. They fold their wings up, and they drop into the box. Yeah. Well, they can't climb. So when they're trying to get out, they're flying. Well, their wings won't go through the grid. And then he would just go grab them out of the box, and he would, you know, wear that spot out until he had whatever he wanted. And I mean, the fact that you can set up and – like, where do you get chickens? You go buy them, you know, maybe locally. Maybe you order them. Like, you don't just go out and get chickens from, like – now, around here, you probably could because people have more than they need when hatching season comes. But you know what I'm saying? Like, the fact that no matter where you are, you probably could find a place to acquire animals at zero cost. And maybe that's not a best practice, but in a, you know, kind of, I'm not going to say a survival situation, because if you're waiting till then to do that, you're messing up. but in a prepper environment where you're strapped on cash, this is a very low cost of entry if you choose to take that approach.
Yeah. And so another tip also would be that pigeons, probably like chickens too. I know sometimes if our chickens get out, well, wait till nighttime, kids, and then go grab them. Same thing with pigeons. So if you know where some pigeons are kind of hanging out, kind of go out there around dusk and, you know, snatch them up by hand that way too.
I talked to a cop that said he saw some activity under an overpass. And so he sees flashlights and shit. So he goes down under there, and it's like a couple hobos basically. And they were basically catching pigeons to eat. And that's what they were doing. They were just going in there at night and just pulling them off the ledges. Up where the shit comes together in the overpass. I said, "What'd you do?" He goes, "I laughed and left them alone. They weren't bothering anybody. There's no game regulations, and I'm not a game warden." but like, I've talked to more than one cop that said they've observed behavior like that. So yeah, that would be another way to do it. You're just kind of one-offing them that way. Is that how you talked about getting some ferals? Is that how you got yours? Just go snatch them?
Yeah, I mean, you can grab them real easy that way. And so there's also like, and so it depends on what route you want to go. But I guarantee you that like there's this whole underworld of the pigeon culture where I can almost guarantee anybody who's listening that in your city, in your state, there are racing clubs, there are all breeds clubs, there are different, because all these different, there's Birmingham roller clubs, there's all these different breeds. There's over like 600 different breeds of pigeons, and there's specialty breeds clubs for each one of these. So in your city, especially with the racing clubs, so especially if you want to get some homers and stuff. So these guys are going to be breeding and then retiring and selling off birds. And so if you want to come up on something like that too, you know, maybe try to find some racing clubs, and you can get a couple of nice birds for like, you know, 10 bucks a piece if you wanted to go that route for racing homers. And also, if you're interested in doing like a bigger bird, that are, these are pigeons that have always been bred specifically for like at harvesting, you know, for meat, like the kings and carnews, you know, you can go to some of these all breed pigeon clubs too and get some that way too. And those are some, I mean, they're ridiculous. They're huge pigeons. You know, we was calling them like the chicken pigeons because they are so big, but they also dress out really nice. I mean,
yeah,
you know, cause that, if you really like that taste, cause it is a good taste and you know, it's a different kind of meat, you can get some really big servings off of those birds.
Well, and I think that pigeons are like everywhere and nowhere. Like, and I mean pigeon people, not the birds themselves. And what I mean by that is there's like a feed store up the road from me that I do a lot of business with. And I'm in there one time and I put this aviary in for quail. And I was thinking about throwing some kind of cool finches in there that can live outdoors, even in our winters, just kind of for the top area of everything. And, I started talking to this dude that runs a little pet thing up there. And he was like, "Have you thought about using pigeons or doves?" And I'm like, "That's not what I'm looking for in this situation." But that cracked it open, and oh, he's into homers and racing, and like, and he just went off. I'm just sat there for like 15 minutes taking it in, and it's like what I realized at that moment is pigeon people are like ham radio people, but much less annoying. Because a pigeon person wants to tell you about what they do, the ham radio operator is like one of us. They want to bring you in the cult pinch grill, right? They want to like put a bag over your head, drag you off the ham radio and induction society, and you know, praise the leader and become one of them. Where the pigeon person is just like, "I'm really passionate about what I do." And so there are people, they're like beekeepers in a way, right? They don't try to force you to get a beehive, but they are very excited to tell you about it.
Yeah. I mean, and it is like, you know, like I said before about like, you know, what's in the loft sort of a thing. And it's just quiet kind of culture that's happening all. And it's pretty amazing, right? I always think it's amazing because it has been going on for like literally thousands of years. And what amazes me is that we've been able to keep hundreds of breeds alive for thousands of years. So that means like during wartime and famine and, you know, depressions and all this stuff, that there's been some pigeon fans here out there being like, man, this one breed of pigeon, you know, I got to keep this thing going. And they have, you know, that's fascinating to me.
Can you explain how like a pigeon would compare in terms of like feed efficiency, reproduction, space requirements with chickens? Because chickens are what everybody has. Personally, I think a chicken doesn't taste anywhere near as good as a pigeon myself. And my other question for you with that is, do you, your birds that are like let out to fly, you do still feed them, right? And kind of how much do you feed them? What percentage of their diet do you think they get from foraging, that type of thing?
So I have one loft of my white doves, right? And so I loft fly those. They're free. I never close their loft unless the day before I do a white dove release, I close it the night before to make sure I'm not going out there to grab
them. They're home in the morning, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. other than that, I let them fly all the time. And then I have my my ferals that I've been kind of building up their numbers for when I get my dove coat finished. And I don't feed the ferals. Those do their own thing. You know, they're crosses between ferals and homers. I call them ferals, but it's because they're kind of wild.
They're foamers.
I'm going to stick with that, by the way. I'm not taking that. And I do have chickens, too. So I have some seals and some other breeds and stuff like that. And I'm obviously a pigeon person through and through on this. And 100%, you know, I feel like the meat is way better. But the food that I'm doing, so I'll get like the Tractor Supply mini pellets, and I feed that to both. It's the 16% protein, and that's what I feed to both pigeons and my chickens. But my chickens also, they free range as well. I'll let them go and do their thing. And I have bird pigeons that I foster, so I'm also pulling eggs from other pigeons. And so we'll use those eggs as well. The feed isn't that much, though. I mean, they're a lot smaller of a bird, too. I mean, my chickens plow through feed. You know, they go through a lot of feed compared to what I'm getting out of them. I mean, I definitely feel like the amount of feed that goes into what you get out of with pigeons, even if it's just meat production and eggs alone. And as far as raising the youngs, I feel like my chickens are only really getting, you know, it's a season, right? Like spring and summer, you're going to be like, oh, babies. Whereas my pigeons breed all year. And they breed a lot. So it's 19 days after they lay the eggs, you know, the eggs hatch after 19 days. And then even while they're feeding other babies, they've already sat.
They're making the next. Eggs. Yeah.
And they're like raising.
Six a year or some shit.
Oh, you can get more than that. I mean, especially really? If you're fostering. So they can really get some numbers up fast, and they can make a lot of babies really fast. So even if you just get started with one or two pair.
Yeah.
You can get a pretty nice, you know, flock going pretty fast. And that's really what you want, you know, to really have a good dove coat where you're going in there for sustainable, you know, pulling squabs out on a regular basis. You know, you want those numbers up pretty high. I had a friend in Oklahoma that, you know, we got him set up with a dove coat. So he built the building and he was just like, oh, this squab's good. Bop, 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 bop. I'm like, dude, you got to let your numbers get up. But he just kept pulling squabs and, oh, I'm back down to 12 pair. And you got to let the numbers get back up, you know, but let them do it because they'll do it. You give them the time to just sit in there and breed, and they'll get their numbers
like
up.
It's like a farmer eating all his heifers, right? You got to have breed stock there, right? And in this case,
exactly,
you don't have one male to like, you know, a herd or a flock. You need they pair up, they pair bond.
Yeah, and they'll pair for life, and then and they raise. And it's interesting. They'll pair for life. They take 12-hour shifts. The cockbird will sit for 12 hours. Hen comes on for 12 hours. They both create the milk and they both feed. I mean, it's a tag team effort, but I mean, they'll pump up those babies fast. I mean,
and they usually have about two chicks per.
It's lunch. Always two eggs at a time. Yep. Yeah.
It's like they lay those two and they immediately go to incubating. Like, and I didn't know that they were meat size in 4 weeks.
In 4 weeks. Yeah. It's funny because they're.
Whale takes six.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never did quail. My neighbor does quail, and I've always just been like, man, they're so tiny, you know, it's not worth it.
Yeah, they are little. They're about the size of a dove. You do get, unlike a dove, you can take the leg quarters, and they're worth taking. 7 weeks is optimum. 7 weeks is when they've got about as big as they're going to get. Any additional gains will come at the expense of the meat toughening up. because they are running around at that point, right? So, and then your culls, man, I would say a cull quail is probably tougher than a pigeon. Like, cull, because they're constantly, they hardly ever fly, but they're constantly running. I mean, just constantly running. So,
yeah. So these, I mean, when they're, and it looks funny because they really are like, they're the same size as their parents. And it's just, you know, two pigs. Yeah, they're just, they're almost, you know, they look like they're fully feathered at that point. And so there's these two just big pigeons sitting in this nest bowl, and they, you know, they don't fly. They're just sitting there, and it's just, you know, it's like, you dorks, you know, like, you guys could totally get out and fly, but, you know, it's right at that time, right at 4 weeks. Because if you go past that, then, of course, yeah, they'll take off and fly, and they'll be breeding pretty soon, too. So,
yeah, that's what I want to go next. The quail will be big enough to harvest if you in a pinch at 5 weeks. 6 to 7 is optimum. 7 to 8, they're ready to breed.
Yeah.
How fast do pigeons go from hatch to where you can make more pigeons out of them?
So at about 3 or 4 months, they're going to be starting to breed themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, and so then that cycles
12 to 16 weeks. Okay.
Yeah, so they're right back in it again, you know, and that's just another perk, you know, especially as, you know, and then their lifespan, you know, I've got friends who have pigeons that are, you know, past 20 years old. So, I mean, they can live a really long time, too.
And probably because they're making a lot of babies, but they're clutching two eggs and sitting and clutching two eggs and sitting, they probably lay very late in life. Like, a chicken has about 1,000 ovum when it's born. And it's gonna make you 250-ish eggs in its first main year of production. That's 25% of all the eggs it's ever going to produce. After that molt, that second lay cycle is never as good as the first, and it's a declining game after that. And that bird is a net negative by its third year, definitely.
Yeah,
I would bet a pigeon that's 10 years old is still making babies.
So I got a 12-year-old capuchin pigeon, which is like a fancy breed. It's got like the hood and everything.
Oh, okay. I know what you mean.
And it's sitting on eggs right now. It's 12 years old, and it's sitting on eggs right now. And I'm using it to foster some parlor rollers. So it's like, why not? You know, you still want to do it. So let's go. You know, it's still doing its thing. I mean, they're an amazing, hardy bird. And, you know, another benefit, too, that I would say, you know, I'm sorry to keep picking on chickens. I have chickens. I'm not like a chicken hater.
Yeah, you're not any chicken.
I'll just say that, like, if you're looking for another benefit to them over chickens in the backyard is that they are a lot quieter. They're not going to have that like rooster noise and just, you know, I swear that chickens kind of talk sometimes. It freaks me out. I'll be in my backyard and I swear that I hear like talking, you know, and just that weird noise that they make, you know, like the cooing noise, you know, like you said, you probably hear it in the background. Like that's the most that you're probably going to get out of the pigeons, which, you know, it's pretty low frequency. Kind of relaxing, you know, but
people like doves. It's a dove coo. Yeah. That's what it is. Yep. You know, it's like, there's no, or the,
exactly.
They get upset and they're like, they start that kind of nervous hen and they're like growling and shit. Like they don't do any of that. What about eggs? Like, I think that's something really overlooked too, that like, there's nothing about a pigeon egg that doesn't make it every bit as viable as a chicken egg or a quail's egg to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit bigger than a quail's egg, a little bit smaller than a chicken egg. And we have, you know, chickens, so they got that, like, richer egg than what you'd get at a store for sure, darker yolk and everything else. But, yeah, we use them just like anything else, you know. They're good eating, just like any other egg.
Yeah, and I think people, like, you know, they make too much about eggs. Like, I really love my duck eggs. Those are richer.
Right.
And pretty much every other bird's egg I've ever eaten, though, they all taste the same. And even the duck egg, if you make scrambled eggs, I couldn't tell you one from the other. If I'm eating like an over medium where that yolk is, I'm like, that's a duck. I know it. But in general, with eggs, I you know, if you want the equivalent of a chicken egg, it's probably 2 to 3 pigeon eggs. It's like 3 to 4 quail's eggs. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
What do you think are maybe some other lessons that people in this life are preparedness-minded and homestead-minded can learn from how pigeons were used in wartime? and other emergency situations, because I think the meat part's pretty well understood. Oh, by the way, before we go on there, for those that are on the audio only, I put this up earlier, and he probably is laughing when he reads this, but this is, I just looked, like, if I wanted to buy pigeon meat online, how much does it cost? Here's one squab. The price on this bird is $25.99 a pound. Right. That's like USDA prime freaking ribeye pricing. And you just go pull these things out of a building in your backyard. But, yeah, let's kind of move over to more about what you can do with comms with them.
Yeah, I mean, I know. So, yeah, I live off grid. I'm up in northern Arizona. You know, we're all solar. All my neighbors and stuff, we're all off grid up here. And I keep trying to tell them as well, you know, like, hey, come on, you know, let's get some of these 3D printed capsules. And, you know, you got this outbuilding, just turn it into a loft. I got a lot of little outbuildings, you know, that I've just converted. Yeah. We had a little outdoor shower back in the day, and I was like, boom, there's a loft. You know, like, it doesn't have to be fancy. You know, where these pigeons live, you can pretty much, you know, if you have some old little shed that you've kind of moved on to something else, that can be your little starter loft until you kind of have the pigeons for a while and be like, you know, maybe when I, you know, do this next time and I build another one, kind of get familiar with the birds and your property setup or whatever and how you want to do it. But, you know, maybe just a conversion loft, you know, something like that to get set up. But for how easy you can get into it, really, even if you're going the route of finding a pigeon racer and getting pigeons that way, or if you're going to grab some ferals and just do it that way, they'll breed and you'll have babies there. And when those babies are there, they'll always be coming back to that area again and again. That is going to be their home. And you have this source of communication. Like, the main reason that I, you know, there's no race clubs for me in this area. The nearest race clubs are down in like Phoenix. That's like 300 miles away from me. So I can't participate in those. I'm not going to spend the money to send birds off to like these one loft races and stuff like that. I'm only keeping the racing homers strictly for backup communications. I train them. They can go really far distances and everything else. And that's what they're for. They're just
define really far distance. What does that look
so
like?
So if I need to, so like 200 miles, like if I go to Phoenix and I turn a couple out, you know, they'll go over mountains and stuff like that. And that's about the distances that I want to take them. Anything more than that, you know, I don't want to see the benefit in going anything further than that, but you know, 200 mile trip, and they can come back home. They have the muscles for it. And then also, once you have a team that can make some pretty good distances like that, it makes it a lot easier for the young birds. So then I'm not having to restart all the time, 1 mile, 5 miles.
Yeah, yeah.
Miles. I can take those young birds with these guys and do like a 20-mile toss, and they'll just go with the flock. But then every now and then it's good to do like a 30-mile toss and then just do one, wait 15 minutes and do one. Because you also want that individual bird to know how to get
back.
Be
able to do it without anybody else.
Yeah, because you don't want it to just kind of rely on the flock.
Yeah.
But, you know, you really want these, you know, it's like I said, I mean, we are so reliant on these, you know, our phone. How many times a day are we looking at our phone? Like, how people treated these birds back in the day, like, that was like the flex. You know, that was like, man, look at the dove coat on, you know, that guy's property. You know, like, he's got, you know, he can communicate. You know, he knows he's tapped in. You know, it's like, you know, that was the way to really, you know, be informed and stay with, you know, the communications.
You know, and without getting into any of the politics of it at all, for the average person in Iran right now, there is no internet. There is a decided lack of the ability to communicate. And if you get outside of like the big city of Tehran, there's a lot of very traditional culture, agriculture left. I just bet there's some pigeons flying around in Iran right now with some messages. I just bet that's happening because the IRGC can do whatever it wants to jam cell comms to damn the internet. It ain't jamming a pigeon.
Yeah, especially over there because that's been going. They've been doing that beforehand.
I'm betting they haven't let it go the way we've let it go. Right.
Yeah.
The Middle
there's
East.
A lot, I mean, yeah. There's a lot
I
over
just
there.
Say, like the Middle East rural population holds on to tradition a lot better than I think we do here in our country.
Yeah.
Do you think they really still have value, though? I'm sure there's skeptics thinking, like, how much do we really need a pigeon to take a message to Frank? Like, You know, I got a cell phone, I got email, I got Zello, you know, hell, I might even have an old school landline, right? I mean, like, unlikely that I would be able to communicate with Stan with all of, you know, one of those methods.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would just be another one. And for the cost to have it, you know, like I said, no, you're not putting anything into it, especially if you're converting an old building, you know, so if it's a building that, you know, you've no cost into it, you're grabbing feral pigeons and letting them loft fly to get used to it. So you're zero cost into it. Why not, you know, for that sake? And in a scenario, you know, for if we're playing a scenario game in that, then likely things could go left pretty easy. And yeah, it's, you know, it's just one of those things when it comes to preparedness, it's better to have it and not need it sort of a thing.
Yeah.
And that's, like I said, that's kind of why I keep my homers, is just to have it. Cause yeah, we don't really have a landline out here. You know, we don't have any, there's no actual lines at all. So anything you have is always good to have. And, you know, also at the same time, I just really enjoy watching them fly too. You know, it's really cool to just look out and just see these, and especially with the white homers, you know, cause they, you know, they're real pretty to watch fly. I mean, they shine in the sun and then they turn and they disappear and they turn and come back. And, you know, you got the different colored homers flying with them. So it's a pretty feature to add to your property too, you know, and then, you know, you hang out on the porch and see the pigeons out there kind of hanging out with the chickens and everything else. And so, I mean, they bring a lot of other values to it.
Well, and for the people that came in later than the very beginning where we talked about this, you monetize those pigeons, right? So if you weren't here at the beginning when we started, these white homers that he's talking about, they're white doves to be released at funerals and weddings and things like that. And people pay a lot of money for this. So you drive these birds out to this event, whatever it is, and when asked to, you release the birds on some cue, and they fly off, and they're all beautiful, and they go right home, and then they write you a check, right? Yeah. Like, so what you look at then is you kind of have this homer instinct that can be monetized, because I guarantee there's not that much competition in this market, especially in a city like Dallas-Fort Worth with 6 million people. There's probably more demand for this than there exist birds. So you can monetize it. You get meat, you get eggs, you have an animal that self cares, and then you can look at the communication ability as a byproduct.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so many perks. Yeah.
My buddy David says, with automation, what would you do if you didn't have to do it? Right. Yeah. It's kind of that same mindset. Like, and they communicate, right? Like, it does all this other shit plus this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's different ways. I mean, right now the racing pigeon world is getting very, very crazy with pigeons. They had a pigeon that sold for over 2 million euro a couple of years ago in China, because the people who are buying the racing pigeon, that's a whole other animal right there. Cause there's different ways to compete. You know, they have the guys who compete with the spinning pigeons and everything else, but the white dove release for me, like I said, it started as a side hobby. You know, with quinceañeras, sporting events, weddings, funerals, you know, there's just a lot of different things. I'm the only guy.
Quinceañeras, we have a lot of those around here. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Quinceañeras are a great way to do it. You know, I mean, those guys are, you know, they put on such a big event, you know, those are wild. You know, so why not? Let's do a dev release also.
ChatGPT, act as an expert on event marketing. Find me unseen niches for dev releases, right? Like, yeah.
I didn't think about that prompt. I got to try that.
Yeah, I would go a little more involved with that, but yeah, like that. What else can I identify as a place to market my thing into? And so, yeah, I think you're getting kind of the comms as a backup, and it has all these other reasons. And then the one you were talking about sold for like $2 million. I'm guessing that's probably a bird that like won a bunch of races, and they're like, I don't want to race it anymore and risk a falcon eating him. So whoever bought him is probably buying him for a breeding program, I would think.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we always joke. It's like, can you imagine buying that bird and then it starts sneezing or gets sick, you know? But I mean, yeah, the racing, because
you let it out and then like you just see a peregrine come in and just
You know. And that's one of the things, you know, depending on where you live. Like where I live, it's you know, we're not a lot of trees and stuff, and so it's a great place for, you know, we don't have a lot of birds of prey. We got big ravens.
They don't have a lot of ambush points, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, homers are actually really good at evading a lot of the birds of prey. The pigeons that really get nailed by birds of prey are like the Birmingham Rollers. You know, they do the spins in the air, so they look injured. And so the birds of prey just can't help but get those things, you know.
That's like when you throw that big slow topwater bait with that chop, 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 chop into the line for a bass. Like,
yeah, it looks like a lure for.
Yeah. Or when you catch that jack and that bull shark's like, oh, you're in trouble. Like, okay, yeah. It's like a big lure for the hawk.
And there's ways you can, like, safety-proof your loft. Like, they have it's called a Sputnik trap.
Okay.
So it'd be like bars that are kind of at an angle, and the pigeon is trained to go down in.
Okay.
And so if they're trying to get away quick from a bird of prey, they'll dip into that and be good. Or, you know, just the bob system where the arms go up and then they come back down. And most birds of prey aren't going to know what to do with that. So when you build your loft, you know, you can look this stuff up online. But, you know, stuff like that really does help keep it, you know, safe that way. I loft fly my stuff. I'm probably only losing like one, maybe two birds a year. And that's also doing tons of releases from far away. And realistically, you know, that's not too bad of a loss for all the flying my birds are doing.
What would you say to somebody listening to this right now that wants to give it a shot? Like someone who's a homesteader or interested in homesteading and preparedness, and they want to get started keeping pigeons and avoid the most common beginner mistakes.
Yeah. So just baby steps, right? Like, just maybe just get a couple of pair and do like, if you have the ability to do a conversion loft, that would be ideal. Like if you have a really small kind of like shed building or something like that, that you can just convert, like don't go crazy with it. Don't try to build some big thing and, you know, jump into it with a ton of birds right off the bat. Like just learn the birds first, learn their habits and everything else. Don't believe everything online, you know, like just see for yourself. Cause everyone's in a different environment. These birds are different, do different things, and, you know, just kind of feel it out, you know, get a couple of pairs, watch them breed, let them fly around, get used to it. And it depends on what you're doing with it. If it's just for communications, if it's just for meat, cause there's a lot of ways you can take it, right? So I crossed my ferals with homers to just put a little bit of size on them to keep that homing instinct really driven. There's also people, there's a pretty cool Facebook group, Squabbing Pigeons, which is all about the, you know, meat production of pigeons. But there's people who do these really interesting crosses where they'll cross like a carnu or some of these really larger birds, but they'll also cross other breeding traits. And so that you can do these interesting crosses because they breed so much. Darwin was like fascinated with pigeons because they breed so much. You can really play with the genetics and kind of create your own monster when it comes to this. And depending on what you want with it, you know, you can have a lot of fun, but just start small and, you know, kind of keep the prices low in the beginning and then see which way you want to go and then, you know, take off from there.
Yeah. I always say with stuff like this, start small so you fail small. And that way, if you hate it, you can quit. Right.
Yeah. Right.
I think it's a huge mistake when anybody, I don't care what it is, like they go to the max from the beginning, set up a small system, test it, see if it works, decide if it's right for you. And if you want it to expand, it's very easy to expand. But you can get deeply into a sunk cost fallacy if you go too far too fast. Like you said, a small dwelling, a couple pairs, get them going, get a feel for it. Is this what you want or is it not what you want? I think that's a really cool, useful thing. You've got all kinds of resources. You want to tell people about how they can find out more about what you do?
Yeah, so I'm the host of a podcast, and we talk about all kinds of different stuff with the pigeons. It's the All About Pigeons podcast. Yeah, we run a nonprofit, so we do presentations on the history of pigeons, you know, wartime, everything that we're kind of talking about here. The podcast is pretty informative on there. We got a Facebook group, too. There's a lot of different Facebook groups on pigeons. The one like we're talking about, if you're interested in the meat production, there's a Squabbing Pigeons one that you can check out there too. That's our website right there, pigeonpod.com. You know, it's if you want to geek out on pigeon stuff, you know, we got all the pigeon stuff right there. We host a pigeon show on the first Saturday of October up here in Snowflake, Arizona, which is really geeking out on pigeon stuff. We do a cooing contest. I got a fortune telling pigeon, and I mean, it's wild. We do it all, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and he's also got a YouTube channel, Facebook page, Instagram, I think a TikTok. I'll make sure all of that's in the show notes for you guys today because most of you are probably in your car on your way home from work while you listen to this if the pattern holds. and you might want to find this stuff and you might forget and think you need to write it down. Don't worry about that. I always have all that data on the audio side over on my blog at thesurvivalpodcast.com. If you're watching this video, after the live is over, right down in the video notes will be a link to that episode on my site where you can get all that information. If you're watching us live right now and you click that link right now, it will not work because we're not done yet. Before I let you go, though, man, let's take a few questions. Question number one from Dennis Allen is, I remember at a workshop a gentleman had hawks making money catching pigeons in hangers. Any interesting ways to generate income with pigeons? I think we covered that with the white dove releases. Is there any other pigeon monetization techniques?
I mean, so it's funny. So like in the hobby, there's people who, you know, through breeding and stuff like that, raising pigeons in the one loft races. I mean, you know, the winner takes like home $1 million, but then, I mean, you get paid all the way down to like 30th place.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, and so you basically breed these racers and then you mail them a baby and they train your bird. They do all this stuff and then they race your pigeon. And then whatever that pigeon comes in at, you know, people are making thousands of dollars, you know, doing the one.
Okay, so that's how that works. I was wondering, how do I race pigeons if everybody's going somebody different
place? Yeah, so the one loft racing is huge right now. Like I said, so there's no race clubs up here. So the one loft race is kind of where, like, people like me would participate in racing. So I mail a young bird because it's not homed here yet.
I got you.
So they would home it to their location, and then they would train thousands of these birds at this one spot. And then they would do, okay, here it is. You know, been training these birds for 3 months, and now we're going to race them. And then whatever your bird, but I mean, everybody kind of makes in the top 30th place. You know, everyone's kind of at least breaking even towards the bottom. But I mean, even the top, you know, whatever, they're still making thousands of bucks. I mean, it's
jeez.
So there's that. You know,
situation. You're not even doing the training at all. You're selecting from your own genetics the bird or birds that you think have the greatest potential.
Yep.
But you have to figure out who that bird is before he's grown up and able to do his thing.
Yeah. So you really got to, like, you know, pay attention to. So really, like, the guys who do really well, I'm sorry, the pigeon fanciers who do really well, because women participate as well. It's a they do really well if they actually race their birds. And so they can kind of get an idea, because there's also people who look at it as a business thing. And so they'll just boom, build a monster loft. Spend thousands of bucks on birds, never see any of them fly, just looking at pedigrees and being like, you know, these ones mathematically pair up and send them out, you know, and they'll send 30 birds to a one loft race and roll the dice with it, you know. But I also have friends up here that do really, really well just by knowing their birds, and, you know, they'll make some pretty good money on these one loft races.
That's really cool. Let's go on to another question then. Red Flyer Media. Do pigeons have some group internal clock system? My neighbor used to feed wild birds, and the pigeons would congregate every Wednesday at exactly 10 a.m.
I mean, I think so. They know when, like, so the shop, the ones I have right here in my shop, I mean, they also recognize faces and stuff too. I mean, they're really intelligent. They're one of the few animals that recognize themselves in the mirror. So an eternal clock, I would absolutely say that they have one in there. We did an interview with Professor Wasserman from the University of Iowa, and he just went down the list of all the different things that these birds can do. So an eternal clock, I could totally see. They definitely, like the birds that I loft fly, you know, they have a schedule that they're, you know, loft, bath pan, back to the loft, you know, like they have their own routine for the day that they're doing. So especially when it comes to feed, like my fortune telling pigeon, you know, that was all done through feed training, you know, and I've trained him to pick up a slip of paper, take it over here and drop it down a tube, you know, so they're highly intelligent. So I could see a clock being working in there.
Yeah. They definitely do seem to know what time to show up when they're regularly fed. It's not like the feeding makes them come. It's like they're there like, bro, where is it? What's up? Right. I think birds in general have some sort of clock to them, though. Especially like the birds that we have turned into livestock, because my ducks are that way. They know exactly what's going. They know when it's time. Right. And when you don't show up, like when I don't feed them by the time they expect to be fed, they let me know.
All right. Yeah.
I hear them. You know, there's a couple of walls between me and the backyard, and I hear the quacking like, hey, asshole, we're like, we have a deal. We make eggs. You feed us. We made our eggs. where's our food? You know, we sort of kind of answered this, but if there's anything more to it, go ahead and add on here. Jesse's asking, how long can a pigeon be held before they end up rehoming to that location?
So does that mean like how to ground a pigeon?
I think what he's saying is like when you're doing this comms stuff, and so you gave me your bird and I'm going to put the USB on him and send him home. Like, is there a certain amount of time? Like, if I've had that bird over a certain amount of time, that bird's probably going to be like, this is my home now.
So I've had a pigeon that I got from a guy in Phoenix. So when I was first getting into white doves, I was buying a lot of different white doves because I didn't want to have too close a genetics with it.
Sure.
And I was like, man, I've had this pair of birds for a year now, and they've had babies again and again.
Okay.
And so I was like, these have to be, right?
Yeah.
Not at all. Like, they were gone.
They went straight home. So,
I mean, that's what they were bred for. That's what they're going to do. So, I mean, that's an example. I couldn't tell you exactly, but that I've had those birds for a year, and they probably had probably about 8 sets, and they were still out. So if you're really careful, so I mean the old style would have 2 separate lofts. Like I would keep your birds in your and separate it from mine, of course.
Okay.
And then you're pulling eggs and not letting them nest, then you know, not really keeping them uncomfortable, but kind of letting them know like this ain't your home. You know,
this isn't your home. This and isn't your place.
Yeah.
And I would bet that maybe letting them reproduce and all, like ferals would probably ground to a location because they're not selectively bred for that homing instinct. Maybe a little quicker, maybe 6-8 months. I don't know where that bird is going to stick around. Like you said, if they start making a bunch of babies for you, those babies are grounded. Yeah. And if you start flying them and some of them leave, that's fine. And you know where to get them wherever you got them the first time. They probably went right back there.
Yeah, that's where they go, yeah.
Okay, cool. Most common diseases or issues with pigeons, and I'm going to combine that with this next question because it's in the same vein. Do you have to worry about diseases when keeping pigeons and chickens together? And I'm going to bet you're going to answer this. Keep them like any poultry, proper sanitation, and don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, so the only times that you would ever really run into diseases with pigeons would be if, like, so I show pigeons. And so, like, we just had the Grand National show up in Oklahoma. And so that's about 5,000 pigeons in a show hall.
Okay.
And those pigeons are coming from all over the country. And they're, you know, blah, 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 all in these cages. And so the biggest ones you'd have to worry about would be, like, adenovirus and PMV. And that's if you're showing pigeons.
Okay.
So if you have a flock of pigeons in your backyard that you're not taking to shows and stuff, then you don't have to worry about that. So if you're showing pigeons, then you can get a vaccine for PMV and the adenovirus, and you don't have to worry about it. My ferals especially, they're always going into the chicken coop and trying to steal food from the chickens and everything else, you know. And there's, you know, I've never had any issues with anything crossing between those two. It's a closed, you know, I mean, as far as biosecurity goes, everything's right here. You know, I don't have any neighbors for miles around. Like, they're not going anywhere else. And so there's not really any.
I look at it this way. There's a bridge area. There's tons of them down there. There's, you know, a couple hundred of them in a Walmart parking lot at any given time. They're not falling over dead.
Yeah.
Right. They've adapted to the world, and they don't watch our news. So they probably don't get COVID or whatever.
They actually had a really interesting thing because they tried shutting down a pigeon show because they said, the avian flu. Right. And so a couple of they were actually injecting avian flu into pigeons. And they can't even carry it because just like chickens, pigeons run a really high temperature, and so it burns off a ton of stuff. You know, they're actually pretty.
That's true. They are a very high body temp. Like, I was surprised the first time a guy brought me some quail from one of his litters, and when I put my hand in the box, it was like putting it in an oven.
Oh yeah,
it was, those little guys generate, man.
And they sit on eggs too. They're really cooking.
Okay, this is a question mostly on maintenance here, also from Jesse. Are pigeons a full-time job? And what is your total average time investment for business and homestead separately?
So the ferals, I mean, they're totally out of sight, out of mind. My kids do a lot of the chores for feeding. You know, my daughter's feed, my son's water. So I'm pretty lazy on that. I'll go in there and I'll do the banding and make sure the pairing is correct for my showbirds and stuff like that. And so, you know, we homestead out here, and they're just a part of that. And as far as, like I said, this is why, you know, I swear by these, you know, because we do goats, and we have ducks and chickens and other things, and these are just the least maintenance and the yeah. best production out of it. And as far as like being able to travel and stuff, you know, when I have to give someone a list of things to do, my shop, the pigeons that I have in my shop here that, you know, they're in the cages. Yeah, that's different. But as far as the ones that bring this homestead value that we're talking about today, I don't have to say anything. Just yeah. enjoying, look at them when you go and feed the other animals. Like, that's it.
On your ferals, do you feed them at all?
Not at all. No.
Oh, you don't even feed them. Okay. Wow. Huh.
Yeah.
So they're literally, the work would be grabbing squabs when you want them mm-hmm. and grabbing eggs when you don't want more squabs.
Right.
That's literally, and so if you went away for a week vacation, well, they can, you know, they can hatch babies during that time or whatever.
Just like, let them grow.
Yeah. So literally you tell your property sitter, just don't worry about those.
Yeah. Yep. Just enjoy. Look up. Oh, that's pretty. You know, that's all.
Hey, Alabama says, do you court crows to keep predators away?
Yeah. So I have a gut box like over on the east side of my property on a pole.
Yeah.
So whenever I process like a goat or anything like that, I put some leftovers up there to kind of keep some balance, you know, just be like,
bring some crows in.
Thanks. Keep the BOP, the birds of prey away. And
yeah,
we've done that for years, you know, but yeah, I try to keep those guys happy because I mean, really we don't really get like the hawk because it's the small birds of prey, like the falcons and things like that. Like the falcons, big red tail hawks.
Stuff, yeah.
You know, the big red tails, they're not going to chase down a pigeon. They're way too agile and fast, but those ravens drive them off.
Yeah. Yeah. And contrary to what some people seem to think, I have never had a crow cause a problem. Like, I've never had them, like, going in and try to kill baby chickens or some shit like that. Like, some people seem to worry about that. We don't really court them here, but I've got a murder that lives in the woods right behind my place. And every once in a while, I'll just hear them going ape shit on a hawk. And I'm like, get them, boys. They just go freaking berserk when they see, like, this hawk. Like, and that hawk is like, no, I don't need this. I can fly, too. I don't need this bullshit. I'm going to go over here. I got one more for you, and we'll let you go. Hey, Alabama, will one pigeon hatch eggs from another pigeon like chickens will?
Yeah, so I do a foster system. So I have parlor rollers, which are they're a flightless bird, and they ground roll. So we compete with those by the distance that they ground roll, which also makes them kind of shitty parents because sometimes you startle them, and they'll roll in their cage and crack an egg. So as soon as they lay the eggs, I take their eggs and I give them to another set of pigeons to hatch those eggs.
Okay.
And they foster. And then the eggs that those other pigeons, you know, have sat on, I take those and eat those eggs.
This is not a bird that was just destined to be successful in the Darwin world, man.
Oh, man. We always joke. Can you imagine the film documentary, you know, the parlor rollers in the wild, like being startled and just rolling across the ground?
Oh, it makes me think of the goats that, you know, you yell and they fall over or something, goats, right? Yeah.
Oh, the parlor roller world is it's wild. I compete with the parlor rollers. It's a fun bird.
That would be like a goat fainting competition. All right, man. Hey, I appreciate you being with us today. I knew this was going to be a fun and different interview, and it was. Again, I'll make sure that I have links to all of Phil's stuff, including his Pigeon Cast, Pigeon Pod, whatever it's called, a Pigeon Podcast, and that'll all be in the show notes in just a bit after we wrap up the live stream. Philip, man, thank you for being with us today.
Dude, thanks, Jack. This has been a real fun time.
All right, guys, real quick before we wrap up, I just want to remind you, you can always help us out by doing your online shopping beginning at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. If you start your shopping there, no matter what you buy, you will help us out. You'll see all the items I've reviewed over the years. There's about 500 items, and they're categorized by type of category. They're alphabetically for you to look things up. And you can find all the stuff I recommend. But it doesn't matter what you buy. If you start your shopping there and buy stuff from either Vavor or Amazon, you help us out. So please consider going there before you pick something up online today or over the weekend because we are done for the week. Also, real quick, if you are not yet a member of the Survival Podcast Member Support Brigade, please consider doing that. It really does pay for itself. I used my own product this week ordering some things from one vendor, and it saved us $78 from one vendor on one order. This is a product that costs $50 a year. I saved $78 on one order. In other words, it does pay for itself. Sometimes, by the way, there's some hiccups with member discounts. I had somebody email me today and say they tried to use the discount for $75 off a phone at Above Phone, and it didn't work. Most systems require an expiration date, and they only let you go so far out. Sometimes the code expires. The vendor didn't mean for it. I didn't know it. My first knowledge about it is when you tell me. But this is the proper thing to do. Let me know, but also let them know. Because what happened in this instance, by the time I got it fixed, guy's like, I already got my phone. The CSR over at Above Phone's like, yeah, something's wrong. I don't care. I'll just manually do it, and gave him his discount. So it always take it also to the vendor as well, and that might get you a resolution even quicker. But let me know so I can fix it for everybody else. But I work really hard to build that program. There's over 70 companies that do discounts in it, and you can support the show at $50 a year, which if you do the math, comes out to about 20 cents an episode if you like the show that we're doing. With that, I will sign off for the weekend. It's a little bit of a different week. It's kind of got my internal chronometer all screwed up because this is supposed to happen on Wednesday at noon, and now it's Thursday at 10, and I'm done for the week. But that's a good thing. I hope you have a great weekend as well. Take care, guys. I'll catch you on Monday with a brand new week starting off with the Just Jack Show.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have.